Good evening, everyone. You lovely Ipswich Town fans. My name is Graham Blackburn Rovers, and welcome to the Naked Football Show. In the studio this week, we welcome, of course, those were the days, Phil Ham.
Hello.
And accompanying Phil tonight, we welcome no less than two virgins. Making his home debut this week is Those Were the Days columnist The Vulture.
Evening all, evening Graham.
And he'll presumably only be known by that name because of tax reasons.
You can call me Vulch, Graham.
Mr. Vulch or just Vulch?
Just Vulch.
Vulch, okay. And another youngster making his debut is season ticket holder Rod Gray.
Good evening.
Good evening, Rod. Right, so email in with your thoughts and queries and anything else to studio@icrfm.co.uk, or you can text us on the usual number, which is 07973 851 968, and also contact us in the same way if you would like to become a virgin on the show as well. Okay, Phil, pretty dismal game on Saturday, wasn't
it? It was dire, really. It's time
awful.
Time for the manager to resign.
Shall we move on?
No, I think we should go through the minutiae of the game very carefully. I can't remember a better home performance in some years, really. It was absolutely superb from beginning to end. Even half-time, I think, was probably the best half-time we've ever had at Portman Road, with the skewer being put through, the pitchfork being put through the Norwich City shirt, which... Mark Murphy did his thing bet, which, you know, poor man has now recovered. But it was thrown on the ground and a pitchfork was put through it. Yeah, finest half-time, great first half. Disappointing last half an hour, I thought, though, because we didn't score enough goals to sort of get to to 7, 8, 9, 10 or 11.
But no, I think that's Jim had the temerity to change things a bit at the end, thinking we'd hold on to a 6-0 lead, which was a bit of a risk, wasn't it?
Well, yeah.
And so the goals dried up in the last 15 minutes, which I thought was disgraceful, really.
Yeah.
Anyway, Vulture.
Yeah, well, I thought it was rubbish, really. No, seriously, it was one of those afternoons that makes you proud to be a Town fan, really, wasn't it? I mean, 6-0, I mean, crikey, 6, love, better luck in the second set, Bristol. But you got to feel slightly sorry for them, because they go all that way and get a 6-0 spannering. But I'd like to say a word for John Walters. I thought he was fantastic. I mean, obviously, he scored a hat-trick, he's going to take the headlines, but... I have to admit, I had my reservations when he came to the club, but he's won me round, and I think he's a good, hard-working lad, big future ahead of him, and especially his second goal. I don't think I've seen a ball hit that hard for a long time. If the keeper had got behind it, it'd have been in the back of the net with it. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So hats off to Johnny Walters, but you can't take away from the rest of the team. Fantastic team performance.
I thought Pablo had a great game as well. He was really chasing back, which he rarely does. Even, you know, he's got all the tricks, he's always had them. But I thought he was racing back and trying to tackle even.
Controversially, I know I might get thrown out for saying this, I thought the referee had a good game. Because if you
had to go.
Sorry about that. But for the fourth goal, he allowed an advantage where it was found Billy Clark, I believe. It was standing up.
He did, yeah.
And it was at the other end of the pitch, he allowed the advantage, the ball came flying forward, and Johnny Walters did his trick and smashed it in the back of the net. So, well done, ref. And I think that might be the only time you ever hear me say that.
I think it's one of those very rare occasions. There was absolutely nothing to moan about, which is a bit disappointing, isn't it? But,
yeah, should go on now.
Apart from the fact that there was nothing to moan about.
Everybody played well, you know, and I agree with you. The ref was okay, and everybody played well. And there's somebody, going back to Walter's second goal, I mean, he hit that so hard, but somebody near me did think the goalkeeper might have saved it.
Bit of a chocolate wrist, you think, in the words of the great Loro.
But it was a hell of a shot.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I think the goalkeeper would have ended up in hospital. I know people always talk about Ted Phillips and how hard he hit the ball. Yeah. Obviously, I was too young to remember that. But
I am.
But I mean, he presumably he used to hit it really, really quite hard.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I remember a few years ago, Alan Armstrong hit one really, really hard. I can't remember which game that was. That was comparable. But
as you say, Phillips used to put the keeper in the net, didn't he?
Yeah. The keeper got behind it, and the momentum would. I mean, once that did actually happen. The goal, he got it sort of in his midriff, and he was had his feet off the ground, and he kept going.
Yeah, but I suppose balls were like cannonballs in those days. wet day.
Weigh 4.5 tonne with the lace out on a wet day, that's right. You headed it, you're in hospital for a week. I'd have to say Neil Thompson, I can remember Neil Thompson, he actually got timed for one of these magazines, didn't he? It was like 67 miles an hour. He had officially the hardest shot in the league at the time. This would be in the late 90s, late 80s.
Yeah.
Back in the days when Neil Thompson was famous.
Billy the Fish, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Billy the Fish, wasn't he?
Billy the Fish.
That's right.
I mean, yeah, Neil Thompson. Neil Thompson would fit in really well in our team at the moment, though, wouldn't he, with John Walters?
I think so, yeah.
He was, Neil Thompson is known for those enormous diagonal balls from left back to the right midfield, which was Steve Whitten. But I think, you know, Steve Whitten is no John Walters. I think John Walters benefited very much from Neil Thompson being in the side. But yeah, I think everyone's sort of looked at Walters and thought initially it's a bit of a strange signing. But he has come on leaps and bounds.
And he is so good in the air, which is quite surprising, because, I mean, he's not small, but he's not a huge man, but he's very, very good in the air.
Yeah, and... yeah, I mean, you know, I think Tanner got him on a contract till 2010, which I think is quite useful, because I think if you were a Premiership scout now watching Ipswich, the player that you would be most interested in would be, Neil Thompson.
As I said, I remember on a show a few weeks ago, because I play football with one of the stewards on a Monday, and he said that there was actually Premiership scouts looking at him about 3 or 4 weeks ago, so... good job we've probably got a bit of money coming in to keep him,
because
otherwise we would, as you say, we may well have left.
But the other thing with him, though, he's had a career that's been so kind of lacking in stability, that having found a club where he obviously has settled very nicely and is enjoying his football and playing very well and scoring goals and everything, he might think twice about moving on again. I mean, he moved on from Bolton really because he wanted to find first team football, and you know, it's really taken another, I think, 3.5-4 years for him to actually get back to the situation he was in when he was at Bolton.
Well, you would hope that, but you know, one always worries about the agents, the influence of the agents sort of whispering in his ear, come on, John, you can get this and you can get that.
But at the same time, he seems to be a fairly level-headed sort of chap.
Well, hopefully so. I mean, hopefully he'll stay at least to see this campaign.
Yeah.
And, you know, because it would be tragic if we lost him now.
Yeah, I'd be glad to see him go.
Yeah, I think everyone would, wouldn't they? Yeah.
I wouldn't expect it, certainly, given the situation with the money and such, like, coming into the club. I think we're in a position now where we'll be able to withstand the advances of the
If players get unsettled, it's very difficult. And it's not, you know, it's not always the club, is it? If a player really doesn't want to play for you, it can be very difficult.
Okay, quickly, there's a slight pause in conversation. We from Smithy in Hearts, which goal do you think was the best on Saturday? There you go, that's a good talking point.
Because
they were all very good, weren't they, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I mean, I like the final one, I think, because...
they're all great, but Mignago's, you can't forget that.
Yeah.
That was so clever, the way he calmly pushed past it into the net, as they say.
It was just a shimmy, wasn't it? It took out three defenders and
the goalkeeper. I mean, the thing I like about him, he does actually look and think about what he's doing. You know, if he gets to the byline, for example, he doesn't just sort of hammer it across and hope for the best. He actually looks up and tries to pick out a man, which not a lot of our players do.
Pablo's goal was certainly an identikit to the one he scored against Wolves.
It was almost a carbon copy.
So I'm a big fan of the fourth goal, simply because of the power that Johnny Wolves put through it. David Wright, I mean, I think...
that was a good goal as well.
David Wright's header, because he's a fullback, I think journalists are contractually obliged to say that he popped up in the box. He popped up in the box, scored a great goal. And be fair to the lad, he must have been absolutely delighted with that. Because, I think
he's playing very well the last two games. You know, not everybody rates him, but I think the last couple of games has been excellent.
Solid, very solid.
I think he was a great player at Crewe. I think, you know, when he was at Crewe, he was one of the best players in this division. And he's another one who perhaps lost his way a bit by going to Wigan and not playing very often for a couple of years. I think it does take players, when they're in that situation, a couple of years, takes them a little while once they move on to get back to the standard where they were. And he's certainly doing stuff now.
Got a message for the Vulture. Have you ever played competitive football? This is from Matt from Claydon. Says, Vulture knows what he's talking about. Has he ever played competitive football?
Yeah, I have played football at the very lowest levels of the English game. I tell you, I played
for Norwich.
Yeah, that's right. I think they were looking at me last week, Norwich, actually. And I've played Sunday League football for... and let's face it, if you saw me on a Sunday morning, you would say I am rubbish. I've come out and said it. There you go, out of the closet. I am a bad footballer.
So if those people want to know who the Vulture is, just go and watch football on a Sunday and pick the worst player. That'll be the Vulture.
Well, that's if Matt's playing, obviously. Otherwise, if he's playing, I'm the second worst player.
Message from Simon Allardyce in Bristol. I've missed the last two shows. Guess where he was? Hawaii.
But he's having a great time when he gets back, especially with all his local mates.
He's picked the best ones. So I apologise if this question's already been asked. Given the likely investment coming to the club, who do you think that Town should bring in?
Well, I think, you know, everyone's sort of talking about positions, aren't they? Centre half is one that I think universally everyone thinks we should bring in somebody. Central midfield, I think, is another one where people are sort of saying, yeah, we probably need someone with a bit more bite in the tackle. Striker, one or two people were thinking maybe someone in the sort of Francis Jeffers mould. I've said this a couple of times on here. Right back, we've maybe not got young cover. Do you know what I mean? Full back, we've got cover perhaps, but it involves moving people into perhaps they're not their best positions. And as Jim doesn't seem to want to give Michael Sinnott a go in the first team, I think he probably might look for a youngster. But I mean, as in specific targets, Rob Jones seems to be the one that centre half that was mentioned a few weeks ago. Central midfield, David Norris and Richard Chaplow have both been mentioned, and quite possible players. Darren Ambrose has been mentioned a lot on the
message. Yeah, don't we need a wide left?
Wide left.
I mean, you're not forgetting Gavin Williams. I mean, if Gavin Williams is fit, he's had a terrible record since he's been.
But the problem is,
he's a wonderful player. Yeah.
But if he comes back, how long is he going to remain fit for?
Exactly.
And is left midfield his best position anyway?
Yeah.
Well, he might be a better option.
Well, I thought Garvin played well on the left at, where did he play? At Milton Keynes.
Mm.
I thought he looked pretty good there. But whether that's...
That's wasting him a bit, though, I think. Because, you know what I mean? He does dictate things when he's in the centre. Yeah, left midfield, I mean, Billy Clark, I think, does quite a good job, but he's not a left midfielder. He will make his career as a striker, I think.
Mm. I'd agree with that, yeah. I think he's a bit of a slight fish out of water on the left there. And, is there another left midfielder in the division we could buy with the money? Well, £12 million, I should think there would be.
I think we should put a bid in for Huckabee, just to annoy Norwich fans.
I think...
and Ipswich fans.
We should put a bid in for Huckabee, put him on the bench and make him clean the reserves boots.
Yeah. I'm advocating that, by the way, in case anyone suggests that.
I am. I'm advocating it.
I do like that David Norris you mentioned.
Yeah.
The Plymouth guy.
I suppose another player is Paul McKenna, is another decent midfield player at Preston, who, you know, you might think might kind of look
hypnotic sort of player. You mean?
For the obligatory joke. He might get rid of our way hoodoo. I think I've been saying that. It'd be hypnotised. He's another player I think sort of has done well in his division over a number of years and could possibly be another target. But left side, I mean, I can't think of any obvious left sided player in this division that we'd kind of make a bid for. Can you think of anyone who
No, blank look.
Now, apparently we sent a scout to the Republic of Ireland under-23 game last night, which is a team made up entirely of Aircom League players. Although one of them was that John Paul Kelly, who was on trial here a few years ago. And I was told by somebody that Joe Royal quite raised him, but didn't rate him highly enough to sort of take him on, in as much as he wasn't any better than anyone else that we had at the time.
Right.
But two or three years on, you know, he might have progressed a bit further.
Do you rate Mark Yates, Colchester?
Well, it's another possibility. He's done quite well there, hasn't he?
Can take free kicks.
Free kicks.
No, we haven't got anyone that can take free kicks at the moment, have we?
Dan Hardy. No, sorry. Apologies to any Dan Hardings listening.
He just apologised to people in the upper tier of the Green King stand up for his free kick recently, didn't it? Free kicks, we seem to go through phases of having players who do quite well for a couple of games and then drift away again. Garvin did quite well for a couple of games. Last season, Matt Richards did quite well for a couple of games and then that drifted away. Mm. And we've got no real... I mean, Williams takes a lot of free kicks and corners as well, doesn't he? Mm.
Here we go. We've got one email from Rich. He suggested Alan Mahon for your left-sided answer.
Yeah. Maybe.
He did very well here, actually, didn't he?
He hasn't done a lot since. Worries you with someone, you know, he hasn't actually blossomed, has he, since he left us?
Is he playing for Burnley at the moment?
I'm not even sure he's playing for... I think he came on at sub the other week, didn't he?
I don't know about Darren Ambrose. I mean, I thought Darren Ambrose was wonderful to play for us, but what's he like now? I don't know.
He's still quite young, though. I mean, what's... there must be about 23, because he's the same age as Darren Bent, isn't it? He's another one who's perhaps lost his way a little bit. I mean, Newcastle, I think the move there came slightly too early for him, didn't it?
Yes, it was a silly move, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it kept the club running, but from his point of view.
From his point of view.
But It doesn't seem to settle that well at Charlton either, does it?
No.
I don't know. I mean, perhaps coming back to the area might suit him, you never know. I mean, whether he's available or not is a different matter, isn't it? Central defenders, I mean, Rob Jones seems very much in the mould of Jason DeVos.
Yeah, he's about 6'18" or something, isn't he? He's a big, tall lad.
That's probably, we do seem to get caught out away from home with crosses, don't we?
Yeah.
More so than at home, so maybe we do need some big job.
But I don't see him playing, I don't see Jones and DeVos playing together. I think it would be Jones for DeVos, with DeVos going at the end of the season, perhaps.
But he's done all right, I thought.
DeVos,
yeah.
Lately, yeah, I think so. But I don't imagine him playing in the Premiership, do you? Were we to go
No, on. Possibly not. No, possibly not.
But I wonder whether, I'm not convinced by Alex Bruce, and I'm not convinced by Fabian, given some when he's up against sort of more aggressive attackers like
a case in point with Fabian Wilnis was the game against Preston at home, which he seemed intent on scoring a hat trick at both ends of the pitch. He was all over the place, and if you're a visiting fan, you'd have probably paid double to watch that performance because it was so eccentric. But I got a lot of time for Fabian, and I still think he's probably a better left back than right back than he was a centre back. And I must admit, I'm a bit of a Bruce fan. I do like Alex Bruce. I think he's a decent player at centre back. Whether he's what we're going to need if we step up might be another question.
I just think he makes too many mistakes.
We're still letting too many goals. That's the bottom line. I mean, you can look at individuals and you can't see anybody who's obviously, you know, the causes all the problems, but collectively they keep letting them in.
Yeah, I mean, most of the goals that we let in over the last 4 years, really, are down to individual errors, rather than the team defending badly as a team. Do you see what I mean? It's rare that anyone kind of cuts through us in the manner that we did against Bristol City.
It's not the same individual. That's the difficulty. I mean, and quite often it's like from a dead ball, a corner, or something. It's a forward in the blame. It's sort of one of the strikers has lost his man. Yeah, exactly. But it's always something different, and I don't know what the answer is. But it's been like that for a very long time.
But managers will say, when people say, you know, ask them at press conferences, you know, we let in so many goals this week and so many goals that week, and say, well, you know, you look at the goals, it was someone losing someone at a corner, someone losing someone at a free kick, people not concentrating. Managers can't do any more than tell people that they're marking this bloke at this corner, and, you know, making sure that the captain tries to make sure everyone's aware of what they're doing when they're on the field. Mm. But actually, case in point was Colchester, wasn't it, the other day, when Liam Trotter came on for Sylvain Legwinski at a corner. Legwinski goes off, Trotter comes on, and no Colchester
player. No one picked him up.
Trotter up and he heads it home, doesn't he? And that, you know, that's the kind of sort of ludicrousness. But managers, you know, they can only do so much, can't they?
Oh, yeah.
The old cliche, once you cross the white line, there's nothing you can do as a manager. I've actually managed a Sunday League side as well, so I know what that's like.
Oh.
And you can tell someone till you're blue in the face, get out there, do this, this and this, and if they get out and don't do it, there's nothing you can do.
No.
Was that the Kesgrove Kestrels?
Kesgrove's
been a vulture.
I used to play the Kesgrove Kestrels.
Did you?
My nephew plays for them. He's played in goal for
them. Year for me,
he's about 8, I think.
So. A message again from Matt from Clayton. This one I'll address to Phil because he knows everything. How much time has Fabian got left on his contract?
At the end of the year, he only signed a new 1 year deal, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think Fabian, I can't imagine he'd get another deal. I mean, great servant though he has been, and sad as it will be because he is the only player at the club now older than me. So it does come to the point where, you know, it's a bit sad when you cross that line. It's a bit of a rite of passage, really, isn't it?
I think I've crossed that line there.
Have you? I mean, the other interesting sort of stat along those lines is that either, at some point this season, probably either Jordan Rhodes or Tommy Smith will become the first player to play for Town who was born in the 1990s.
Oh.
Now that doesn't that make you feel old? In the 1990s.
A question for anyone who wishes to answer it. Because actually, I thought this the other day. Smithy from Hearts, why is Peters not featuring at all these days?
Oh, good question.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because I think most people have actually forgotten him.
I think it might be
especially as we're weak on the left.
Yeah, that tournament.
And he played very well towards the end of last season, didn't he? Last 10 games or so when he came in, I thought he was excellent.
Yeah.
Is it something to do with the fact he missed so much pre-season going to that under-20 tournament for Canada?
I think
that be a factor?
But he's played him early on this season, didn't he? And he's done all right.
I think it's sort of a combination of things you said.
He's not even been on the bench, though, which is a bit worrying.
He came on last week, didn't he?
Did he?
at Sheffield he came on, didn't he?
Oh, I probably had too much to drink.
But I think a combination of things, as you say, the under 20 tournament meant that he came back late, he missed a bit of pre-season, and he had very little break between the season proper and the under 20 tournament. And then of course John Walters in that period came in on the right of midfield, and if there's one sort of player in the team we're not going to move at the moment, it's John Walters.
Yeah.
I mean, he played all but the last 10-15 minutes on Saturday, hasn't he? So Peters on the left is perhaps an option, because that's the thing with Peters, he gets up and down, up and down, up and down, doesn't he? He does have a bit of quality about him as well, but whether he's a good enough player to sort of play on the left as a right footer, I don't know really.
Leicester fan from Claydon, which could be the same other one from Claydon. I'm not sure. Do you know a Leicester fan in Claydon?
I do know a Leicester fan in Claydon. Hello, Leicester fan in Claydon.
Is his name Matt, by any chance?
No.
That's a different one.
It's Mrs. Matt.
Oh, right. It says, given the quality of the match the ref had, actually, we thought he had a good one anyway, but is there a case for video reffing in today's game? There you go, that's one for you.
Oh, I am torn. I have to admit, I am torn about video refereeing. I do think that there's so much financial pressure on referees to get it right these days that I think they need all the help they can get.
Well, they do it in rugby, don't they?
Do it in rugby, but look at the Rugby World Cup. The video ref there, he took 5 minutes to make the wrong decision. Rumour has it he was watching Strictly Come Dancing and was texting in for Brian Capron, but he took 5 minutes to make the wrong decision. Is that going to happen in football? We can imagine if that happened in football, the uproar. That, we've taken 5 minutes out of a game that does flow and it doesn't have the starts and stops that perhaps other games do.
I mean, I have a view. I think that one of the biggest problems is apart from the speed and difficulty of refereeing games these days, I think referees are influenced by the pressure and the crowd and all that sort of thing. I think, we all know that, big teams, home teams, tend to get the decisions. And I think use of technology would stop that. Mm. I think it's much easier for somebody sitting in the stand in a studio to be impartial and make a proper balanced decision than some guy who's got sort of 50,000 people screaming.
Yeah, that's like
names.
It can't be.
I think there's so much going wrong. This is my opinion. I think the Sheffield penalty was absolutely
ridiculous. I was there with Phil and we thought it wasn't a penalty at the time. So I watched the video of it over and over again just to see if there was anything that the ref would have seen or the linesman. But there was nothing. He just
was
not given a penalty.
I wasn't there, but you wouldn't even worry about it. You wouldn't sort of think, you tend to look at the ref, is he going to give it his
No one appealed.
They didn't appeal, did they? The guy kept going and he was going to cross.
The linesman was just getting a bit of stick, he was up the Sheffield end, wasn't he?
The linesman decided he'd give a penalty once the other penalty wasn't given.
He was waiting for the
opportunity.
But I mean, those sort of things are happening all the time, I believe, and always have done, actually.
If that was a penalty, they're
pressured by the situation.
If that particular one was a penalty on Ruud Gullit, that's when you need your video ref.
The Liverpool Everton game the other week was, I thought the referee was absolutely atrocious.
Lescott getting pulled down the box.
That's just ridiculous.
Mm.
How would you progress some sort of video referee? Because obviously, in the situation where a penalty is given, like that, what does the referee do? He blows his whistle because he thinks it's a penalty, or his linesman thinks it's a penalty, and then it's referred upstairs, so there's this kind of 5 minute wait.
Well, it wouldn't be a 5 minute
wait. Well, you know what I mean?
I think we talked about the Rugby World Cup, but that was a one off. I mean, how often does that happen? The general consensus seems to be it works well in rugby.
It does.
The general consensus is it works well most of the time. And okay, there was one incident which perhaps it didn't work so well.
I have to admit, I watch a bit of rugby, mostly on the telly, I have to admit, but all the rugby I've watched, the World Cup final was the first decision I've seen look wrong on the video for the video ref. Yeah. So that's got to be something in its favour, I think.
Yeah.
The other one that always gets thrown at me is they say, right, ball comes off the underside of the bar, bounces out, play carries on, opposition go up the other end and score. Now, where do you stop the play to have a look?
Yeah, that's the problem.
Some of those things need to be thought of. Maybe it has to be introduced a bit at a time, Because as they always say, when a penalty is given, there's usually a delay of a couple of minutes anyway to deal with all the arguments.
I think line decisions, like the ball hitting the other side of the bar and coming, that can be done almost instantaneously. I mean, exactly that happens in tennis all the time. You know, decisions based on whether the ball's gone one side of the line or another. So presumably you've got something that goes peep when it goes over the line in the referee's ear, so he knows. And of course, if the if there is a delay and the ball bends up the other end and they score, then of course it goes with the first goal rather than the second.
Yeah, that's right.
But I mean, I don't know. I mean, are you going to have it for every single decision? Is player X is kicked up in the air by player Y, and the referee on the pitch decides it's not a free kick, but the referee in the stands decides that it is. Is he then going to sort of?
No, you've obviously got to have some sort of. Yeah, that's what I say. I think you introduce it a bit at a time and take it step by step, and then you've got to know when to stop. But I just in principle, I believe in it for the reasons.
I think so. I think in a way you've got to have a game as pure as possible, and as much as the decisions have got to be right. You know what I mean? Rather than I mean, there's always sort of saying that the game on the big stage has got to be the same as the game that the vulture here plays on the park on a Sunday.
Thanks.
In one way, at least, being that the refereeing is the same, but. It's different in all other aspects now.
That's right. It can never be. I mean, it's a nice concept, but you know.
Yeah.
Simon from Bristol says it's called Hawkeye, Phil, apparently.
Yeah.
And he thinks yes for goal line decisions, but not for anything else.
They've got it up in Scotland. It's called Hawkeye the New. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. So he rests just for goal line decisions, but I think, I mean, if you looked at that penalty, say in Sheffield, I mean, that was definite cause for a camera there.
Yeah, I think so. There's a case to be made for retrospective stuff about players diving and things like that.
I think so, yeah, retrospective.
I mean, I know you talked about that the other week. Mm. I think, as you say, if it's proven subsequently that you can't do anything about the game, but you can at least suspend the player and treat him as if he'd been cautioned.
Again, it happens in rugby, doesn't it? There's the citing committee. If someone's throws a punch, it's not seen, but it's picked up on the video. Right. They can then ban the player.
I mean, a lot of these things, if the authorities were tougher, a lot of these things would stop. Because, it wouldn't be worth people's while to do them.
Yeah.
They would, the problem would then solve itself.
Yeah. Any else from the wires?
Well, we have one. Well, actually, we have two, but one we went past it. I'll just find that one again. We went back to free kicks. You see, the trouble is, people email in and you move on, so it's fairly selfish.
Oh,
I've just been given a picture of a... I'll give that to you while I read this one out, and then I'll ask the last one, which is very relevant.
It's Fuchs, isn't it?
From Keno Blue.
Fatty Fuchs with Sheffield United. Played for England once, didn't it?
Yes, I did.
This place makes good radio. I'm holding up a picture.
Yeah, he's holding up a photo.
To the microphone.
Captain of Chelsea.
Anyone who knows me, he looks like me.
This was from Keno Blue. What was wrong with the training field free kick that came off for the second goal at Carrot Road?
It was unusual, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think it completely fooled the Norwich City defence. Although, to be honest, I couldn't believe that a defence could be so static. In that Pablo was playing the ball in, and what happened? The wall was still stood there, and in that time there'd been a shot, a save, a cross, and the ball had been played, and the wall was still in place.
Yeah.
I think that's right, but I think to be fair, Billy Clark did exceptionally well.
Yes, he did.
A lot of people wouldn't have bothered with that.
Right, no. This is pretty much time up, but for the final email, William, and with this picture of a fat bloke which has been going round
William
Fouke. And the headline over the picture of William Fouke says, "Who ate all the pies?" And the final email, which
an apocryphal story that the chant "Who ate all the
pies?" Oh right, came about. Yeah.
Came about, but apparently it's not true.
Well, it's this one's from Simon Allardyce again. With the impending investment, do you think the qualities of the pies will improve?
Undoubtedly.
We'll leave that question unanswered. Okay, thanks everyone for listening. Thanks to Rod. Thanks to the Vulture. Thanks, of course, to Phil. Till next week. Have a good one. Take care. Bye bye.